Our podcast will begin in just a moment. InvestTalk Distribution, made possible every day by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. And Steve invites you to check out KPP Financial's Balanced Income Program. This is a fully diversified program designed to reduce risk from any one stock, bond, or sector. As with all of our programs, one or more of KPP Financial's principals invest their own money alongside their clients. To find out more, just go to investtalk.com and click on the Investments tab. And now, today's Invest Talk.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to Invest Talk. This is our Monday, May 2nd edition of Invest Talk 2016. And our mission each and every weekday is to help you break above the ranks of the average investor. You know, we want you to make good financial decisions, and we're here to help you with that and help you decipher between what is just a media fluff and media trying to get people to pay attention, and what actually is good advice, good things to pay attention to. I know it's not easy. There's a lot of stuff out there that's not exactly not exactly quality advice or quality topics to even think about. I see this all the time, is when, you know, an asset class does really well, well, media talks about it. And when it's doing really poorly, media also talks about it. But that's usually an indication of things are either too frothy in the short term or they're too bearish in the short term. But the average person is not going to realize that. The average person is going to buy into whatever the media is talking about. If the media is saying, oh, oil's in the tanker and there's nothing good about it, well, most people take that at face value. And vice versa. If the media is talking about how great a particular asset class is doing or has been doing, people take that at face value, and that's where they should be invested. In reality, it's probably the opposite. Okay? So if you get all your information from the media, and you get all your opinions from the talking heads on TV, then you're not doing enough work. You're not doing your due diligence. You're not making good money decisions, generally. Now, many of our listeners who I talk to during our portfolio checkups are enrolled or faced with considering rolling over their 401k. Now, most often 401k is the offer that you can't turn down, but people have questions. And when working full-time and planning for retirement, many individuals ask, should I contribute to a 401k, to a Roth IRA, a traditional IRA, or all of the above? Well, the answer depends on various factors. Now, many businesses match a 401k up to a certain percent with what employees contribute. For instance, company A will match up to 4% of employees' contribution. So if employee contributes 6%, company matches 4, really that's like saving 10. In this circumstance, you will want to contribute at least what your company matches. You always want to do that. If you don't, you're throwing free money away. Now, how after you put the money in, and assuming you fall within the limits of an IRA, you may want to decide on what is the best vehicle. The main difference between a 401k, a traditional IRA, a Roth IRA, is the 401k and traditional IRA are pre-tax contributions, which are then taxed at distribution time, years down the line, hopefully. Now the Roth IRA is after tax, meaning you're taxed today on that money, but when you take it out, you're not taxed, ever. Okay? So the question you need to ask yourself is, what tax bracket will you be in when you retire, and what tax bracket are you in now? It's usually why younger people tend to put money into Roth IRA, Roth 401k, because they're usually in a low tax bracket. older you are, the higher odds you're going to be in a higher tax bracket. Okay. Now, typically, individuals who start a Roth IRA are younger, starting their careers out. And, you know, this isn't always the case, though. There are circumstances where some may be in a may make sense to go in traditional 401k IRA, even if they are young. Maybe you make a lot of money. Maybe you're in Silicon Valley and you you work for one of the big tech companies and you make six figures or more, and you're in a very high tax bracket. Then it makes sense to do a traditional IRA. Okay, so that's why we say everyone's situation is a little bit different. It's not one size fits all. Now, no matter what, if it's an IRA, a 401k, you'll be better off investing in either or both to secure an easy transition into retirement years down the line. All right, so that's a quick rundown of IRAs and 401ks and how you should think about them. Now, do you have more questions about making these choices? Let's hear from you. 888-99-CHART is our anytime number. Now, let's see what question is waiting for us right now that came in over the weekend.
Hello, Steve. This is Sean from New York. Thank you for your podcast. I listen to it every day. Today, I have a technical question. I think it is because I don't understand the concept of mutual funds or index funds. So my question is, if you have in your index fund $50,000 today, but you started investing 20 years ago, but today you have $50,000, and I start investing today and I invest $50,000 today, if the market goes up for the next year, will your money go up faster than mine, or we both will see an increase in the same rate? Thank you very much. I'll be listening to the podcast. Thank you. Bye.
Okay. It sounds like he's talking about investing different dollar amounts. Well, if you're in the same investment, the more money you have, the more it's going to go up, right? Your return will be the same percentage-wise, but you'll make more money if you have more money. So it's pretty simple. I think that's the question he was asking. That's why I see a lot of people misconstrue how much money somebody is making. You know, somebody say, oh, I made $5,000 last month. Well, $5,000, that can be a lot of money. But it can be a very small amount. If you have $5 million, $5,000 isn't that big of a return. If you have $10,000 and you made $5,000 off of it, that's a huge return. It's 50%. So it's all in context. So you have to – the more money – that's why we say the more money you save, the sooner you save, that compounding effect really takes hold over time, because you're growing that money, and a growth on a bigger base is can be a huge amount. Okay, so it's about compounding interest over time, and that's why we try to get everybody to start thinking about this sooner and not wait until, you know, you're 50 or 60 and just a few a decade or so away from retirement. You want to start thinking about it as soon as possible, so you can have the biggest nest egg to grow off of. All right, let's talk about the smart things to do with your tax return. That's our main talking point today. We just passed April 15th, or I think it was a little later this year, but we just passed tax season. So a lot of people probably got some sort of a tax return in the mail over the past few weeks. And what should you do with it? And it depends on what's your situation. Whether you are just starting out, whether you are trying to play catch up, or maybe if you're just financially secure, can be still the windfall that you get, and this can apply to any windfall, not just a tax return, an inheritance, winning the lottery, whatever it is, it can be applied to all windfall situations. So we're going to touch on that. I also want to talk about, when is a house a bargain? You know, a lot of times you'll read in listings for a home that this is a bargain, or it's a great value, or it's a deal. Well, is it? Well, Trulia did a study, real estate website Trulia, on the different listings that had those type of words in them. And it was pretty interesting to see the results and whether they thought it really constituted a bargain. So we're going to talk about that. And then the buyback ETF. Buybacks have been really big over the past 6 or 7 years in the market. And there are ETFs now that track the companies that are buying back stocks the most. Okay, so we're going to talk about that has been waning, and is that a warning sign for the market? And then Puerto Rico is defaulting on some of its muni debt, and this means that there's record defaults in the muni market right now. Not record, but increasing, I would say, defaults in the muni market. And then we have a call, we have an email question as well. Now, we're glad you're with us today for InvestTalk. I'm financial advisor and licensed realtor Justin Klein. Here is an opportunity for you on May 12th, along with my real estate partner, Chevy Atkinson, who is an award-winning realtor. We are both offering real estate reviews via Skype and telephone on May 12th. So we can talk about your real estate needs, whatever you're thinking about, whether it's investing in real estate, downsizing, upsizing, whatever it is, when it comes to your real estate needs, we can help guide you in the right direction. So to reserve your time, just click on the Contact Justin button on InvestTalk.com and write in Real Estate Review on InvestTalk.com.
How you doing? I want to ask you a question about my company, Cisco, S-Y-Y. I own quite a few shares, about $90,000. I'm over 60 now, and I'm getting nervous of having so many shares in one company. But I do get 15% off of Cisco stocks. They take so much out of my paycheck each week, and every quarter, the money they take out, I get 15% off, and I get those shares back. I purchase those shares. But the payout ratio is getting very, very high. It's almost 100% payout ratio, and they pay a decent dividend. Dividend's like $1.24, okay, on the average. What should I do with it now? Because I'm getting much older. I'm not sure what to do. If you can give me some advice on it, I'd appreciate it. Thank you.
All right. It sounds like he works for Cisco Corporation. No, this isn't Cisco, the tech company. This is the food distribution company. And it's still a very large company, $27 billion market cap. And he's right. If he has $90,000 in this company, I don't know what his total retirement nest egg is, but that's a substantial amount of money. And we always say you shouldn't have more than 10% of your wealth tied up in any one company. So if you have $1 million or so, I think you're okay. It's not too much of your portfolio. But if you have anything less than, you know, $900,000, you should probably start cutting back. And I know you get a 15% discount on those Cisco shares, and that's pretty typical for, you know, large companies allow their employees to buy the company stock at a discount. What I would do is still do that, but then sell. You know, they usually have some period we have to hold it, but sell and continue to buy and sell, but sell more than you're buying and slowly reduce that amount that you get or that you own of Cisco stock down to under 10% of your total retirement nest egg. It's a little expensive at these prices, so this is definitely a good time. They came out with earnings that were still pretty good, but it's a slow growth company trading at 23 times earnings, just kind of on the expensive side. So good time to start more aggressively cutting back your position in your company, Cisco Corporation. Now, this is InvestTalk. Share your investing experiences with us. We just have an hour, actually about 40 minutes left in the show, so I invite you to join in now. Call sooner rather than later. Let's talk about it. 888-99-CHART. That's how you get through and ask your question on today's show. Let's take a quick look at the market today. We had a modest up day. The Dow was up 117 points. The S&P was up 16. The NASDAQ was up 42. Pretty decent day. You had oil and gold down a little bit after some pretty big runs over the past couple months or so. And really, we're still near the highs, around the flat line for the S&P for the year. Earnings projections are still down. I think about three quarters of S&P companies have reported so far in this earnings period. And about three quarters, or sorry, about, I think typically it's two thirds usually beat. And right now it's actually a little higher than that. I think it's a little over 70%. So earnings are coming in better than expected, but they're still down about 7% year over year, which doesn't bode well for the market. We still haven't exceeded our highs from December, right? We're looking for a higher high is really what we're looking for, and the market hasn't given that to us yet. The market peaked out middle of last year, had a rally into November, and then a little brief rally into December, made a lower low, and we made a lower high, and then we made a lower low in January and February. And for the trend to change, we need to make a higher high, meaning we need to get back above the November highs, and we still have not gotten there yet. So overall, we're still in a downtrend, but it's kind of a sideways, modest downtrend at the moment. Now let's get to our main talking point today, and that's about what you should do with any windfall that you might have, and maybe it's your tax return. And it all depends whether you're starting out, whether you are playing catch up, or whether you're financially secure. So if you're just starting out and maybe you have $5,000 or less, what should you do with it? Well, first you should probably save it for a rainy day, open a savings account, and also maybe an IRA, a Roth IRA. Try to put it in a place where you can't touch it, because if you see it, you're probably going to spend it. That's just the natural habits of people. So you put it into an investment account, maybe put it into a CD. And so you still have it, cuts down on your financial stress, puts you in a better situation, earn some money on it. That's helpful. Pay down debt. That's something you should probably think about as well. Okay. $5,000 to $25,000. What should you do with it? Don't go out there and spend it on some extravagant thing. Also, put it into some sort of investment account, or maybe become a homeowner. Find a bargain in your area of something to buy that you're going to hold on to for the long term. Okay, it might give you enough for a down payment. Okay, $25,000 to $50,000 or more. What should you do with it? Well, I think educate yourself first. If you're thinking about going back to school, you're thinking about advancing your career, maybe use it towards that without taking on more student debt. Or invest it, but you need to educate yourself first about investing, like you're doing now here on Invest Talk. Consult with a financial planner. Read books. Okay? Those type of things. So that's if you're just starting out. What about if you're playing catch-up? Well, if you're playing catch-up means that you probably have a decent amount of debt. Maybe you haven't saved enough for retirement or a combination of the two. First, $5,000 or less, tackle debt. Pay off any high-interest debt. Then rebuild your emergency fund. You should have 3 to 6 months in emergency money in case you lose your job or some financial problems hit. Then contribute if it's more than $5,000. Well, contribute the max to your 401k up to $18,000, up to $24,000 if you're over 50. Okay, $25,000 or more. Well, same thing. Pay off debts. Consult a financial advisor. Think about playing catch up for retirement. Okay? And if you're financially secure, well, guess what? You're one of the lucky ones. You get to take that windfall. Go on a trip. Do something for yourself. Why? Because you worked hard to become financially secure. And you gotta feel the fruits of that labor. Okay? So it depends on your situation. Not all windfalls are created equal. It always depends on the person, what your goals are, how close you are to those particular short-term, medium-term, and long-term goals. Right. So that's our main talking point for today. Now you're listening to Invest Talk. I invite you to join our Invest Talk Insider Program or Insider List. It's a way to have access to all sorts of good information, commentary, lists, recorded webinars, etc., including the most recent webinar, Surviving and Prospering in a Volatile Market. Sign up for free on investtalk.com. Click on the Invest Talk tab. Now, if you have a question or you want to share your investing experiences, give us a call. Why not do it now? We have about 28 minutes left in the show. So if you're going to call in, try to do it sooner rather than later. Don't wait till that last segment of the show. 888-99-CHART is our number. Please feel free to call.
We thank you for subscribing to our podcast. You have a standing invitation to try our free and award-winning risk analysis tool on investtalk.com. Sizing up your risk is essential to optimizing your retirement planning approach. Just go to investtalk.com, takes just maybe 3-4 minutes, and click on the Invest Talk tab. Give it a try. Continue now with the Monday, May 2nd Invest Talk. Check in now with your questions. 888-99-CHART. The line is always open. Invest Talk is produced live 4 to 5 Pacific Time. Call in and join in the conversation.
Hi, Steve and Justin. This is Joe from New Jersey. I'm a longtime listener and I really love the show. Thank you guys for all that you do. I just had a question concerning two high yield stocks. The first one is GEO. I was looking at the company and all looks good with the exception of their debt level. I was wondering if you guys could just comment on their debt level and if that potentially could inhibit their ability to pay their dividend in the future. Second company is Waddell Reed Financial, WER, is the ticker symbol. I was wondering what you guys generally thought about the company. All looks good, but it seems to have really collapsed over the last year in terms of share price. I was wondering if you guys could comment on that company as a long-term buy and hold, specifically for someone looking for yield and current and long-term income. Thanks, guys. Love the show. Bye.
All right. What he's doing is he is trying to find high dividends. He's looking at looks like GEO, which is a REIT that works in the prison space, and that's we actually own this for some of our managed accounts, and so we do think that the debt is a little elevated, but we think it's safe enough for us to own for our clients. Their cash flows are strong and their business is obviously steady. You're gonna have prisoners for a long time. And it is a REIT, has a high payout ratio, it does, but its cash flows are still very, very strong. So I think its dividend is sustainable for the medium term, but even if they cut it, I mean, it's 8% now, we still think it'll be a decent dividend even if they did cut it. So I'm okay with GEO. And then he's looking at Waddell Reed, WDR. This one yields 9%. And we used to own this for managed accounts a long time ago, but no longer do. We sold it a while ago. And it's declined pretty dramatically. And they don't have a lot of debt, but their revenues are falling. Their financial situation has certainly weakened. Is it a great value here? It's definitely not a bad value. It's a good company. The problem is if you go into a bear market, which, you know, very likely we could be in for the next bear market, coming up, this is going to take a hit because what is it? It's an investment advisory firm, and they typically, like most big advisory firms, they're long, and people will take money out of investment firms like this during a downturn because they're afraid of the bear market. You know, that we're flexible and we can go short and we do other things to make money, even in a bear market. But companies like Waddell Reed will not. So I think it's good to have on your watch list, and I'd love to buy it near the end of the next bear market. But at this point, I probably would not hold it. Okay. So I hope that answered your questions on Waddell Reed and Geo. I believe it was Geo was what he was asking about. All right. Now let's talk a little bit about whether a house is a bargain or not. Okay. You know, a lot of people look at a listing, they're looking at buying a home, and in the description it might say, oh, this is a bargain, or this is a value, or this is a deal. Well, research from the website Trulia found that in 45 markets it looked at, listings containing the word bargain or similar terms such as value or deal didn't reflect any discount on average over other homes for sale in the market. Rather, it means that they're just as it mean, what that means is that there's just as many bargains that claim to be bargains as there are properties that are overvalued that still claim to be bargains. Okay? Now, there are some markets where it is true, and this tends to be more Midwest regions like Dayton, Ohio, Toledo, Ohio, Knoxville, Tennessee, Buffalo, New York, Baltimore, Connecticut, Camden, New Jersey, Madison, Wisconsin, Fairfield, Connecticut, etc. Those are the areas where if it claims to be a bargain, it's probably true, probably is a bargain. But in most other regions, areas where it says it's a bargain, it's probably not. And for a lot of first-time home buyers, this is especially important because most first-time home buyers are looking for fixer-uppers, things that they can renovate, make their own, and get a bargain. And they need a bargain to afford it. So what you have to do is understand in the real estate market that these are salespeople, and you need a good agent to guide you in the right direction. And this is one of the reasons I got into this field is because I saw so many bad agents out there. So many people use their cousin or their friend they know down the street who really doesn't do a lot of deals. But because they know them, they have them list their home or they have them help them find a home, etc. But because they don't have the experience, they make headaches for the buyer, headaches for the seller, because they missed details. Okay. We do hundreds of deals a year. So when you're working with an agent or you're looking at a particular property, make sure you have the right counsel, because you can the wrong counsel can cost you not just tens of thousands of dollars, but it can cost you massive headaches as well. I had experience anecdotal. This is about 4 or 5 years ago, and this is before I had my license. I referred my mother to an agent. Went end up opening escrow on a property, helping her going through the process. And our agent didn't reveal that there was an HOA litigation on the whole complex, condo complex. Well, what did that do? Well, that means we had to scramble for a new lender because they wouldn't lend on that particular type of property. And a 30-day escrow turned into an 85-day escrow. So that was all down to our agent not disclosing and not being experienced enough to make sure that we knew everything about the property. So when you're dealing with agents, make sure you have properly vetted them all. And if you want a list of things you should look for in an agent, email me. I'll send you a list so that you, next time you're looking for an agent, whether to buy or sell or invest, whatever it is, you have checked off the right boxes. Now it's time for Invest Talk 101. The thing about REITs, real estate investment trusts, can add extra income to your portfolio. One of the best tax benefits for REITs compared to corporate stock is that they're not subject to double taxation. Now, double taxation occurs when the company first pays income tax on its earnings, right? Companies have some sort of tax bill at the end of the year if they make profit. And then they take their money after they paid the taxes, and then they pay income to shareholders in distributions of dividends. Well, guess what? You're also taxed on those dividends. Well, in a REIT, they must distribute 90% of their earnings to shareholders, and as a result, they do not have to pay corporate income tax. Therefore, they generally pay a higher than average dividend through even though the tax bite for shareholders will be higher because of your tax at your ordinary income tax rate, but the REIT itself is not taxed. This is what you actually, it's actually very attractive to hold a REIT in a tax deferred account like an IRA, a 401k. Now, you have to understand REITs can be volatile. You've seen that recently. You saw that back during the last real estate bust. But they can be a good diversification option. Now, when considering a REIT, it's important to analyze management's ability to grow its property portfolio or increase rents, and hopefully both. Does management have a specific plan to improve the value of the properties or the value of the company as a whole? Or the limited partnership. A common strategy used by REITs is to purchase low-end properties, upgrade them, and attract higher quality tenants. If management has a good record of successfully turning around and the market comps are not terribly expensive, then it may be a good investment. So just like any company, management is important. The type of properties that they hold is very important. So when you're looking at REITs, you have to look at funds from operations, different than earnings. There are different aspects to consider. And in this day and age, when so many people are chasing dividends, they can be a good place to be. But you have to understand the tax consequences, the risks, and not getting overly allocated to one particular area of the marketplace. So that's Invest Talk 101. Do REITs sound interesting? Have a question about them? Check in now at 888-99-CHART. It's how you get your question to us anytime, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
You hear Steve talk about portfolio checkups. You can always see his schedule on investtalk.com. He'll be in San Ramon May 11th and San Jose May 25th. For podcast listeners and others out of reach of our California offices, you can meet with Steve via Skype and telephone. To schedule your time, just go to investtalk.com and click on the Invest Talk tab.
Hello, this is Mark in Columbus, Ohio, calling for Steve or Justin, listening on iTunes. I have a question about offshore trusts or asset protection trusts. Want to protect my money from government taxes. I'm 44. I have about $200,000 to $500,000 I'd like to move into an asset protection trust offshore. I was wondering what you've heard about this and what your opinion was about it. Excellent show. Looking forward to your program. Thanks.
Well, asset protection trust is a very broad term, and this is a type of trust that, like you said, is designed to shield from taxes. It's set up to avoid problems in divorce or bankruptcy, etc. You have to have a really good trust attorney that you trust to set this up, and they're complex, and everyone's is a little bit different. Everyone's goals might be a little bit different, so it needs to be written up a little bit differently. Does it mean it's right for you? Maybe. They are expensive to set up. The U.S. government is cracking down on a lot of these types of trusts. What happened? What was the release from? I'm trying to remember what country that was. It wasn't the Cayman Islands. I think it was some South American island recently that exposed a lot of these types of trusts. So they could crack down on it in a very short order. So understand those risks as well. It's going to be very costly, and you could potentially still have to pay taxes on them on that money no matter what if the U.S. government cracks down on you for whatever reason. So it's all really about the lawyer, their expertise, and what risks you're willing to take. And sometimes there's liquidity risk. Sometimes it may be hard to get your money out. There's a lot of questions you need to ask before setting one up. So it's hard to give it a blanket thumbs up or a thumbs down. It really depends on each person's individual situation and whether you're working with the right trust attorney. Now let's get to an email that I got from Darren from Canada. He is a podcast listener, and he's asking about Boston Beer Company. He says it has been dropping and wondered if it's worth shorting the stock. SAM is the symbol. Ooh, it has been dropping pretty dramatically. It went from $327, $320-something and change, now down to $158. And it had a really, looks probably bad earnings a few days ago. It dropped from $173 to the close at the end of the day to $159 and change. Now it's at $158 and change. So it's clearly in a downtrend, but I think you're too late to the game. I don't think it's worth shorting. Let me look at the information on the stock. It is still a little overvalued. You have earnings falling. You have revenue now falling 5%. Doesn't pay a dividend. I like that. I think of on a bounce, maybe into the low 200 area, I think it would probably be a good short. But at these levels, I think you're kind of too late to the game. You know, and he says it has. There's plenty of competition from microbrews and nano brews, and Boston Beer Company is some of Sam Adams, and they have a bunch of other brands. And there's a lot of other types of brews that are coming out to compete. And I understand what he's saying, but I think you're just too late to the game when it comes to shorting. Technical analysis is big, and so is fundamental analysis, but when you're shorting, you're probably not shorting for the long term, right? You're probably shorting for the short to medium term, because long term, the company's probably going to survive. I don't think Sam Adams is going away. Are they overvalued? Yes, but shorting takes a different skill set, and a lot of it is technically based. And this is already down a lot. It's into some decent support. So I think it could get a bounce, but I would probably short it on a bounce into the low 200 level. And if it does, it'd probably be a good short. That was a question on Sam Adams, or Boston Beer Company. SAM is the symbol. Now you're listening to Invest Talk. I'm registered investment advisor Justin Klein. We still have time for your questions. We'll get it in before the hour is up at 888-99-CHART. Once again, that's 888-99-CHART. 99 CHART. Chart 888-992-4278. We have 5 minutes left in the show to get your call in. So if you're going to call, do it ASAP. Let's go to Mark in Mountain View. How you doing, Mark?
Good afternoon. Hi, how are you doing?
Doing great.
Good afternoon. Yeah, I've been trading the triple QQQs, like either the SQQQ or the TQQQ. But each time I buy into it, it would take at least a few weeks for the last couple of transactions before I would make any profit. Because as soon as I buy into it, it would go the opposite direction. I would lose money first, quite an amount first, before I would end up making money. And the last couple of trades, like I said, it takes at least 3 to 4 weeks before I make any profit. Mm-hmm. What's the general overview of the market in general at this point? Do you see an uptrend, a downtrend, or what's going on?
We're in a downtrend. Like I said at the top of the show, until the S&P gets back above the November highs, we have a pattern of lower highs and lower lows, and that is a downtrend. It's very modest at this time, but it's still a downtrend. The reason that you are do you look at charts when you're buying into SQQQ or TQQQ?
Unfortunately, no. I'm not that good at chart taking.
Yeah. Well, then I would recommend not using either one of those vehicles. Those are trading vehicles. I would not be buying or selling any of those. Those are trading vehicles, and if you're using trading vehicles, you need to be looking at a chart. And it doesn't sound like you are. So I would recommend not touching those. And the reason you are you're losing money almost immediately is because you're probably using emotion. You're seeing it move over the past week or something like that, and you're trying to chase performance. And that's the exact wrong way to invest, and that's why you're getting underwater so quickly.
Okay, thank you very much.
That makes sense? So,
yes,
avoid those vehicles and understand we are in a downtrend until otherwise seen on the charts, and that means a higher high for the S&P. We're not there yet. Thanks,
okay,
Mark.
Thank you.
No problem.
Thanks.
Now, let's go to talk a little bit about one of the signs of why we are in a downtrend. And one of the biggest points of favor for stocks over the past 6 years or so has been the prevalence of buybacks. I mean, companies are buying back their shares, and this raises earnings per share by reducing the per share count of that formula, right? Because you have total earnings. How you get earnings per share is you get total earnings divided by shares outstanding. Well, if a company buys back its shares, well, when they divide those total earnings by the number of shares outstanding, there's less shares outstanding. So ultimately, that earnings per share goes up, divided by a smaller share count. Now, what people don't realize is that, A, value matters, just like buying any asset. So if a company is overpaying for their stock, that is detrimental to shareholder value. And also, a lot of times, most of the time in today's market, companies are borrowing money in order to buy back those shares. So it drives up earnings per share, but it also drives up leverage and reduces the credit worthiness of that particular company. Now, over the past 5-6 years or so, companies that have consistently bought back shares have done better than the overall market. But if you look at recent trends, that's actually flipped. And if you look at PKW, which is the dividend achiever, the PowerShares buyback achiever, ETF, it shows that over the past 12 months, it's down about 7%, where the overall market is about flat. So this decline in shares of companies that have lots of buyback or huge buyback programs shows that investors are worried about the value they're getting from those programs and the credit worthiness of the companies that are doing this. And the last time this underperformance from companies that are buying back their shares aggressively was in 2008, right before the last bear market. So understand that this is another indicator. We look at small caps, we look at the NASDAQ, we look at broker dealers, we look at transport companies, and we also look at the buyback index. And when those areas are lagging the overall market, that's a red flag, and we're continuing to be in that type of market. So our time is up. If you have a question you want to ask me directly, you're welcome to send me a note. And we'll get back to you. Just go to investtalk.com, click on the Contact Justin button. I'm Justin Klein, Executive Vice President of KP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm. And for Steve Peasley and everyone at KPP, thank you for listening today. Let's get together again tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor.